Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Face Your Ears podcast. We have a special episode today because we have a special guest by the name of Josh D'Elia. So we're really excited to have our second guest on the podcast here with us today.
Oh, yes. Someone else has volunteered to step into the kitchen.
To give you a little bit of background on our guest today, Josh D'Elia is a songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer, and performer in Los Angeles, California. He began playing Suzuki violin at age 4, later graduating to a Casio SK1 sampling keyboard. While music remained a constant in his periphery throughout adolescence, it was when he began playing bass guitar in high school that it moved into focus, teaching himself bass lines of his favorite songs by The Cure, The Pixies, and Nine Inch Nails. He began writing songs and performing in alternative rock bands in Virginia before moving to Los Angeles in 2001, where he continued to write, perform, and eventually begin producing, learning the basics of his first DAW, Nuendo. He has toured the country, played festivals like South by Southwest and Lightning in a Bottle, and has performed in just about every kind of venue, ranging from basement clubs to the legendary Fillmore in San Francisco. His current project, Sleek Teeth, is a darkwave EBM duo with bandmate Vox Porter. Their debut single, Gone, is available now, and we featured a clip of it to open up today's episode. They are currently finishing their debut EP to be released later this year. And he just so happens to be my brother. So, Josh, welcome to Face Your Ears. It's really great to have you on the podcast.
Welcome, Josh. It's great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Long time no see. I think it's been a while. I think last time I might have seen you, what was that like? Probably how long ago was that, Justin?
If it was my wedding, yeah, 2006. Just a mere 18 years since.
Yeah, last time I saw you, we were sipping champagne in a limo.
Little babies in a limo.
Yeah.
But it's great to have you. I'm just going to jump right into it here. Can you tell us a little bit about your art and what you do?
You covered a little bit in the bio there. I'm a music producer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. I perform live. I'm a Leo. I enjoy long walks in the cemetery.
What is dark wave? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about dark wave?
You're going to start a war here.
Oh, be careful with your answer. Yes,
genre.
You could divide the whole.
There's a lot of Reddit. Threads that you could get into on this and start a lot of arguments. I guess it's music that tends to have a lean into a darker ilk. It's I would say goth adjacent kind of music. Also EBM and industrial are all in the realm of that kind of music. Bands like stuff that I grew up listening to, like The Cure and Susie and the Banshees, and then other bands like, you know, Skinny Puppy, which goes into more like industrial and that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of, I guess, areas you could get into, but it's darker electronic and rock music.
So your current project that you're in, is it all electronic?
Yeah, right now it is. It's pretty much all electronic. We use software and hardware synths to make everything, and also we have vocals as the acoustic instrument that we're using. And we've talked about, we don't really have any boundaries that we've set. We might introduce, who knows, guitar or bass or something like that at some point.
This project is a newer project?
Yeah, we released our first single in October of 2023 and played our first show in January 2024, so it's relatively new.
I just saw some pictures on Instagram. I think you just posted those from that show in January, so that was really cool to see. It looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was great. And it's funny, I got together with Vox, my bandmate, the other night, and we were like, oh wait, we played that show and we had these pictures, and it's like March, it's almost April. Like we never even posted about that. It's one of those things where, oh yeah, the social media thing. Like we've just been stuck in like the recording mode. So it's, oh yeah, we need to peek our head out and say hello to people and and communicate with the world sometimes.
Yes. We have that struggle too with social media and this podcast. It's like a necessary component to constantly keep up with the social media thing so that you can keep doing your thing. It's like a vicious cycle. So we empathize.
Yeah, totally.
So I want to talk to you a little bit more about your role as far as like a producer and a creative person in the studio, songwriter, whatever you want to call it. But I wanted to get your thoughts about balancing that technical versus creative side of things. So in other words, like how do you strike a balance, especially being an electronic musician, where there's like seemingly no limits on either of those aspects? Because you could go infinitely in the technical with plugins and all that stuff, and then that just creates like infinite creative choices. So what is your approach there?
It's funny, somebody I was talking to once who had just recently started producing, and I think they were actually using Logic, which is what I use now, and they were like, I can't believe how much comes with this software. It's like there are so many synths, there's so many effects, there's so many plugins, like where do you even start? And it was like information overload. And I think I said something to the effect of just start somewhere, just pick something and open up a synth, start playing around, and you'll pretty quickly realize if you're feeling inspired, and then you can forget about where you, what you need to do, and you can just start playing and having fun. And if you're not inspired, you can start tweaking the parameters of the synth or try a different preset or open another synth, and hopefully eventually you'll stumble into something that feels alive, and then you can just follow that thing. And that's something I've been trying to do more of, just like getting into something, being really intentional with what you want to use, what plugins, what synths you want to use, a feeling of something rather than any sort of preconceived notion.
That's really wise. I'm curious, do you have like a stable of synths or like sounds that you pull from, or do you try to force yourself every once in a while, let me go off the beaten path and see if that inspires something? Because I personally have found sometimes if I rely too much on something, it becomes stale, and so I have to spice it up and try something totally new and different.
I definitely have some go-to things, like if I'm working on a bass line or something, Serum is great, or Terry Audio's Voltage Modular has a lot of great stuff too. And so I do have those things that I go to, mm-hmm. but then every once in a while, yeah, I will just open a random synth, maybe one that I haven't given enough attention to. And 9 times out of 10, I'll find something cool in it because it is new and it is a different sound and sound fresh. Sometimes I'll try to let that dictate where I go, and rather than being like, I came in here for a bass line, but it's if I find a really cool pad or lead synth patch that's really inspiring, I can shift gears and try to just follow that thing.
Do you and Vox write together?
Yeah, we came to the table initially, and we had both had a handful of ideas, and we showed each other things, and we just picked a few ideas that we both had. And then from there, just fleshing them out, we'll just get together in my studio and get musical ideas together. And then sometimes we'll get the music going. I'll give Vox a copy and I'll have a copy. And then we can go off on our own and maybe start coming up with just vocal ideas as the next step. And sometimes it'll just be like gibberish, just coming in with some sort of vocal mumbling over the thing. Sometimes Vox will just have a voice memo and be like, hey, I tried these like melodic patterns. What do you think of this? And then the next step is we'll start finding phonetics and words that make sense. And then it's just like a refining process from there. And it's nice because Vox is a producer as well. And they actually just got Logic too, which is really cool that we now are both working in the same system. So hopefully we can really start trading back and forth in that way.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the visual elements, because you are a graphic designer as well as a producer. So I know the visual aesthetic is really important for you and your creative just presence as an artist. So the music video for Gone, which listeners, if you haven't seen it, definitely go check it out. It's available up on YouTube. We'll put a link to it in our description. It features some really awesome visuals that complement the intensity of that track. And so what role do visual aesthetics play in enhancing the overall experience of your music?
Yeah, it's definitely a factor. It's something that Vox and I have talked about in the beginning, wanting to have a visual presence, something that complements the music. And thank you for all the kind words about the videos. We worked with director Jane Slater and director of photography Adrian Stucker, who really helped us sort of shape what we were going to do in the video. And in our meetings, we knew from the outset that we wanted to do something very visually, like, gripping, because it was important to us to have, and I know, like you said, the buzzword, a brand, but create sort of an immersive world with the band and have an aesthetic that is consistent and feels like what you're getting when you step into that world. So the video, that's one aspect of it. With the photo shoots we've done, we've tried to be consistent and have a similar vibe to what we've got going in the video a little bit. And yeah, even the live show, we actually programmed all of our own lights. So we have our own lighting set up and synced the lighting with the music using like MIDI. And so like when we play a live show, there's all these moments in the show where the music is hitting certain beats, the lights are changing with it to complement what the audience is hearing. So it's like a really immersive experience.
Wow. So you have to bring a lighting setup to all your gigs with you.
Yeah, we don't have to, but we're gluttons for punishment, so we choose to. That it is a question, because like it is a setup. It's like a handful of like bar lights on the floor, and then a couple of like parkans, and they're all enveloping us, around us, behind us, and we use a fog machine, so like all the light around us gets illuminated, and it's really cool when those lights are synced up with the music. We're trying to create an experience that, you know, once you're a band that's really established and you've got your own crew of people and you're like on tour with your own lighting set up, and you go see these bands at these huge venues and the lighting is just awesome and it's with the music. It's how do we do that at this level? And it's you just do it.
Yeah.
And we even have to see if we're able to pull it off at every show, because it does take time to set all that stuff up. And so we're having to see like how do you actually physically pull it off? But we're hoping to incorporate it as much as possible.
Man, you guys could have dodged the bullet there and just been able to walk on with a few synths and life could have been easy.
Yeah, it's funny. We wanted to approach things like to keep things minimalist on stage and stripped down. And then we end up like our first show's approaching. I was like, I think we need to program our own lights.
Can we go into that more? Can you talk to us a little bit about the LA music scene that you're involved in and what's going on? What's that community like?
It's pretty awesome. I love the scene. Again, if you want to call it dark wave or industrial EBM, or even just like the sort of underground DIY scene in LA, I find it to be like really, really supportive, inclusive kind of a scene. It feels like a big family, and you're all listening to music that may not be considered like mainstream. It's not stuff that everybody listens to, so you know that if people are in this space, they're really into that thing, and there's that commonality. And it's cool going to shows and just seeing familiar faces, and even in the audience you'll see other bands like in the audience there to see whatever bands are performing. You know, everybody's there just like enjoying the music. And but it is nice in LA. It's such a big sprawling place with so much going on that where you can discover something where it feels like you've found your people.
Are there specific clubs that cater to dark wave, or is it kind of something that's just mixed into venues that play all kinds of other things?
Both. There's venues that have all sorts of different nights and things going on, but there are promoters that will tend to be at that same club every week for a recurring night, which is an industrial night or a dark wave night or whatever. Catch One, the venue where we played, has Das Bunker, which is like a long-running industrial dark electronic night that's been going on forever and ever. That's one specific night that happens at that venue. And then there's also promoters that are out there that curate certain nights that kind of speak to this kind of music. But yeah, you can find it. Sometimes it'll just be at a random place sometimes, and a promoter will set up a show at a place, and it's really about the bill that is being put together and finding something like that's consistent and kind of fits that vibe.
What drew you into this kind of music? What is it about this music that you enjoy?
This kind of music, I think there's an honesty to it, because it is darker, but I feel like it's not just dark for dark's sake. I feel like it really addresses like struggle and tension and gets into challenging issues that people grapple with. And it's not always bright and sunny, but it feels very honest and raw. So I think there's something that resonated with me, like I said, like at a young age, like The Cure, when I first heard that, that really resonated. Or like when I first heard Nine Inch Nails, you know, I had never heard anything like that. I was like, am I even allowed to listen to this? I feel like I'm not supposed to have this. So there is something about it that is not necessarily always mainstream. You do have the exceptions that resonate in a way with people that, despite being subversive or challenging, they still manage to resonate with enough people to break through every once in a while.
I can't help but think about, there are different genres of music that are just sort of, for lack of a better phrase, like intentionally subversive. So if you think about punk rock, think about metal or industrial or EBM kind of stuff, like it's all counterculture, contrary to the mainstream in some regard. And I think some people just gravitate towards that.
And I love a great pop song too. I'll be honest, I appreciate good songwriting. So it's that's the thing. If a song resonates with you, it doesn't matter what genre it is, it's good. Is this how it
feels? So Josh, you've been at this for a while, it seems, at least from what I recall from the bio in 2001. What are some of the changes you've seen in the music scene over the span of your career?
It's interesting because I guess from my perspective, I've experienced different scenes. So while the scenes may have been changing, I was also changing scenes, because when I first moved out to LA, I was playing more like alternative rock. And when I first got here, we're just learning the ropes, figuring out what to do, where to play. And so, of course, you gravitate toward some of these places you've heard your whole life about, the Viper Room and the Whiskey A Go-Go and the Roxy. And in the alternative rock scene, those are cool places to play. So that's where you gravitate to. When you're first starting out, you're just playing wherever you can play. You can't afford to be too picky. But it a lot of times that scene felt very fractured in a way. I remember nights where you'd play a show at some of these venues and literally like a band would play. There'd be like four bands on the bill. A band would play. And if there were people in the audience after that band was done, like most of the crowd would like filter out and the second band would play and a different group would come in. Almost different people were coming to see each band because the venues are, it's a business. They're just trying to get butts in the door. So sometimes it wasn't really about curating this amazing bill that's really cohesive. It's just, let me get this band. They've got this following. This band's got a decent following. Let's just shove all these bands together. So it did feel a little bit disjointed in that way, and it was hard to get momentum. And then at some point you start to discover, oh, wait, there's another way to go about this. Like, you can either try harder to put shows together with other bands that you know, or work with promoters that are putting shows together that are more thoughtful, and having to figure it out as you go along and find your scene.
So shifting gears a bit, I wanted to talk about the music industry, which makes us all perk up and smile, and it's because it's in such a good state these days. Josh, we've talked about this a lot, the state of the music industry, and I'm curious to get your thoughts as it pertains to your niche or genre of music, kind of this dark wave EBM, specifically around like promotion and booking and marketing. What are some of the ways that things changed dramatically from like when you were first going at this in like 2001 to like now?
I mean, it's definitely changed. I mean, you're talking like printing out paper flyers and handing them out to people at shows in the early 2000s to like, you know, now making a post on Instagram, which apparently we also are not great at since it took us 3 months to post our last show. But I think definitely that, you know, technology's had a big impact on how bands can, you know, approach their own marketing and their own like promoting and booking and everything. And of course the streaming world and everything, you know, it used to be just, you know, you're printing up CDs, you know, getting, you know, burning CDs and all the physical media that was out there. And now it's like, we don't even do that.
Is there any of that action still in the underground there? I know here in there's a whole basement scene in New Brunswick where people are still making cassette tapes. Is that still a thing?
I see it sometimes. Like, bands will make, obviously vinyl is a thing also, but it's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know that I have a device that could play a cassette at this point. So it would definitely be a cool, like, novelty kind of a thing. I guess as a convenience and everything, the world has gone the way of digital. But as far as the overall music industry and this niche or genre, you know, it's interesting because I was thinking about the fact that Boy Harsher is playing Coachella this year is kind of insane. That's just not a band that I would normally think of, and a lot of people would think of. You know, they're like this, you know, totally just dark wave, somewhat underground, but now has risen, obviously, to a whole other level. But I think it's pretty cool that, you know, you're kind of seeing bands like that on like a bigger stage. It's unexpected. So maybe there's something that's resonating with the mainstream, you know, the kind of music they're making. So that's pretty cool.
You recently partnered with the Melancholia Agency for booking. Can you tell us how that came to be and what that means for you guys?
Adrian, who I mentioned earlier, who is the DP on our music video, he's one of the founding members of Melancholia, which started at the end of last year is when they launched, like in January of this year, so it was pretty recent. But Adrian approached us as they were getting ready to launch everything, and you know, being familiar with our music, he wanted to talk to us about the possibility of joining with them. So we talked about what they wanted to do, and we met with the team, and it felt like a good fit. So we signed on, and yeah, it's been great.
It's great to have you here, and it's great to have someone who's been doing this for so long. I work with a lot of young, emerging artists who are trying to get out there to do their own thing. I wanted to ask you, what is one piece of advice you would give to an up-and-coming musician that wants to get their music heard?
It may sound obvious, but it's going to take a pretty strong work ethic to stay dedicated to it and get the stuff out there. It's one thing if you just want to make the music for fun in your room and just enjoy it, and that's totally cool. But the time where it comes to like presenting it to people and getting it out there to people, that's where it's like a lot of the work really begins. And you just kind of have to be willing to put in the time and the effort, because it can be an uphill battle. It is satisfying when you feel like you finished something that you are really proud of. And if you can figure out how to get it out there to people, it's a good feeling.
Oh, that's great. I appreciate that. And that is something worthwhile to address again. Work hard, work hard. It's nice to have the lofty goals and to have that vision in your mind, but nothing will get there without the work, right?
Yeah, it's like you could say dream big, but...
work bigger, yeah. Right? Yeah, dream big, but work bigger.
Yeah, that's a good. Sounds like a good bumper sticker.
My reaction to that is... people often want the results without having to do the work. And I think that our society is sort of shaped around that in a lot of ways, because with Instagram and Facebook and YouTube and TikTok and all of that, there really is this sort of perception that, like, I don't have to work hard at all. I can just get accolades and the fame and the money and the whatever. And that is sort of myth, this digital myth, I'll call it, that people think they can just have the results and not put in the work. I think that any kind of growth in life, whatever you do, whatever it is you're passionate about, it demands a degree of discomfort and hard work for you to attain, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. So I think that's really sage advice. So we are going to move into the lightning round now, a first for the Face Your Ears podcast. We're going to ask a series of questions and just give us the first thing that comes to your mind. All right, here we go. Number one, what was your most memorable gig?
It feels like the last one we played.
Yes.
Which was?
Which was in January at Das Bunker. It was amazing. I feel like the stars aligned. It was kind of the perfect venue for a first show, a perfect night. The crowd, all the lights worked. It was the maiden voyage for a lot of technical things because it was our first show. So it's it couldn't have gone better. So it was great. It was also a lot of years of experience that led to a lot of troubleshooting ahead of time, like making sure we had any sort of redundancies that we needed, and I think it kind of paid off. So I'm gonna go with that one.
Okay. What's one piece of equipment you couldn't live without?
Not the sexiest or coolest answer, but my computer, my Mac Studio. Yeah. I don't know if that counts.
It counts.
It's a massive piece of equipment that I record and produce and mix everything on. So it's an incredible machine. I got to give it just desserts, because I don't know what I would do without it. I guess I'd go all analog and figure that out.
We couldn't help but ask this. What is your desert island album? You're stuck on a desert island. What's the one album you have to have?
Oh, my gosh. Oh gosh, this probably changes a lot. Goodness, I'm gonna just I'll pick one. If we do another podcast tomorrow, it might be different. I'll go with Violator, Depeche Mode, Violator.
Yes.
From front to back, it's an amazing album. Amazing album. It's awesome. I can listen to it over and over again, and I have for years. So it's kind of proven itself over the decades. So I don't think I'll ever get tired of that one.
Timeless album.
Yeah.
And I turned Rich onto that. Onto Depeche Mode, onto Violator.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm slowly learning the ropes. I was an all metal guy. We talked about this already, but electronic music, when you're a metal guy back in the 90s, you couldn't admit that out loud in the crowd you're with. But let me get to the next question here. If you're not making music, what do you prefer to be doing?
I probably need some exercise. So I would say some sort of physical activity would be good.
So practical.
It is, really. I mean, but it's terrible. I spend most of my waking hours in some sort of chair looking at a screen. Dream of the moment I can get outside and actually get some fresh air, which I feel like are in short supply for me these days. Some sort of outside physical activity would be great.
And finally, what do you hope that listeners will walk away with after listening to your music?
I mean, I hope it just makes them feel good. I mean, that's really all I want from music. And even when music is sad or angry, or there's all these sorts of emotions, it can still be it can still make you feel good in a way. A sad song can make you feel good. Maybe good's not the right word. Maybe it's satisfied.
Or seen or understood.
Yeah. And I think there's some sort of resolution to it. Maybe it makes you think about something. And I think ultimately, if it makes you feel a little bit better about your day, then that's really awesome.
Excellent. Well, we've reached the end of another amazing episode. Josh, thank you so much once again for hanging out with us here, answering some questions, including our lightning round, our first ever on the podcast. And is there anything else that you want to share? Anything to let our listeners know that you've got going on or coming up?
Thank you for having me on. It's been really fun. I'm working really hard in Sleek Teeth right now, and we've got an EP on the way this year, so the big effort that we're working on right now. So stay tuned for that.
Where can we listen to your music? What's the best place to go find your stuff?
I think we're in all the places, so wherever you prefer. We're on Bandcamp, we're on Spotify, Apple Music. I think we got the full-on, share the music everywhere, for who wants to hear it. We're out there.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us on our podcast.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we will be sure to post links in the show description to all of the different things, be it streaming services, social media, you name it. With that, we'll wrap it up and say bye for now. So thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Face Your Ears podcast. If you found this episode entertaining and informative, be sure to share and leave a review. Also, check us out on social media and be sure to comment, and subscribe. For more information related to our podcast, head on over to www.faceyourears.com. Links can be found in the show description. And remember, whether you're a musician just starting out or a seasoned professional looking to talk shop, it's time to face your ears.